It's showtime. Whether you've got 1 minute left before that interview starts or you're about to run out onto the field for that football game, what do you do in those last crucial moments to make sure that you are mentally prepared for success? Well, today you're going to find out. I just did an awesome interview with Daniel McGinn, who works for Harvard Business Review for the last 7 years. He wrote an incredible book called Psyched Up. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some pre-performance routines and how you can make sure that the next time you step into that job interview, networking event, or just making a first impression, that you are mentally prepared for those moments that matter to make sure that you are always seen as being on top of your A game. If you're ready to jump in, I'm going to share this interview with you in just 1 second. All right, so today I am very excited to welcome our wonderful guest. We have Mr. Daniel McGinn. He is the senior writer at Harvard Business Review for the last 7 years. Prior to that, he was the senior writer and editor for Newsweek for 17 years. He has interviewed some of the highest performing CEOs in the world. He has written articles on negotiation, sales, and entrepreneurship, and has also edited some of the most successful TED Talks of all time. And he is the author of a recent incredible book that I have just ordered called Psyched Up, How the Science of Mental Preparation Can Help You Succeed. He is an extremely accomplished writer and editor, and we are very grateful that he has taken the time to be with us today. So I thank you so much for joining us, Daniel.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. So I'd like to jump right in with a big question. So what triggered you to study the science of mental preparation and eventually write a book on the subject?
Sure. So I was a high school football and basketball player, and I wasn't particularly great at either of the sports, but I became fascinated by the things that the coaches would do before the games to try to get us amped up and ready to play, and the things that the players would do to themselves. We had special music we would listen to on the bus and during warm-ups. We listened to a lot of pep talks. There was a lot of ritualistic behavior. There was a lot of focus on the rivalry against the other teams. And it seemed like the coaches were kind of just making up a lot of this stuff. And I always wondered whether it really was effective or not, what the research showed. Once I became an adult out in the working world, occasionally I would run into former athletes who were using these same kind of things on the job. I have a friend who's an accountant who was doing this before big board meetings. I met a surgeon who was a former wrestler who would go through a whole psych-up routine operating room. So I became interested, number one, in what the research really shows about the best ways to get psyched up to perform, and number two, is there room to use this in people's professional white-collar jobs?
Very interesting. So it was an interest that went back a long way, and then you put on the investigator hat to figure it out. Now, so in the science, when we talk about how can we use that science of being psyched up and those routines, not only in our personal lives, but in a career life? So say like a first impression or a first day at a new job, how can someone really set that expectation?
Yeah, I think the way I describe it is every person needs to find the use case for when they can use these techniques. You know, some jobs are very routine. It's the same day in and day out, and maybe in those jobs there's not a huge opportunity to really get psyched on certain days. But I think a lot of jobs nowadays, as you said, it's about first impressions. It's about pitching your ideas. It's about a key negotiation. It's about meeting a very important client. For a lot of us, not every day is the same as every other day. And if you can look out at your calendar over the next couple of months and you have the ability to circle a few days when you know you have something really important and your success in your career is much more dependent on whether you can bring your A game on those days than on the rest, then the techniques in this book can be useful. In terms of the techniques themselves and the way I think about it, when I started the book, I had a very simplistic idea about it. I thought it was much like what you do before a football game. You try to get your adrenaline going and you try to get really sort of strong. It turns out it's much less about adrenaline and much more about your emotions. In particular, it's not a light switch you turn on and off. It's more like a stereo that you kind of have to tune. You try to crank down your anxiety, you try to crank up your confidence, and you try to get your energy level appropriate for what it is you're doing.
Gotcha. Now, do you describe some methodologies for ways of doing that in your book as well when it comes to breathing or power poses and things of that nature?
I do, yeah. Confidence is a good place to start. One of the most interesting days of reporting I spent on the book was I went out to West Point, to the U.S. Military Academy, and I spent a day with technology team, and they have just an incredibly comprehensive approach to how they get their, both their athletes and their cadets to be more confident before they perform. So one of the things they do is they work with the cadets to actually make a script, like an audio script, and then they hire an actor to come in and read the script, like in a professional radio kind of broadcast setting, with an audio, with music behind it. So for you, for instance, you know, you would sit down, you'd close your eyes, there, you would put your headsets on, and this voice would come in your ears, and it would say, "Brandon, you are the best motivational podcaster of all time. Remember your interview with so-and-so when you just crushed it." And, it, you know, these, I was listening to a lacrosse player, and it was going on about specific games. "Do you remember the game against Navy last year when you did this, that, and the other thing?" So they were getting these kids to really vividly recall the sights and sounds and smells of the best moments of their athletic career. And, you know, they were doing it through this manipulation with this audio technique. In our own jobs, I think we can do the same thing. I think before you sit down to do an interview like this one, it's probably useful for you to think back on the couple of best ones you've done before this. Before I sit down to write an article for Harvard Business Review, I'll take 5 minutes and I'll just go back to my favorite story of all time and read it. And doing that just gives me a little burst of confidence. It reminds me, gosh, I really crushed it that time. Now it's time to do that again. So it's a small technique. You know, I think about it like your greatest hits. If you were a rock band, you know, at the end of your career, you want to have like 10 or 12 songs that were really, really good. You know, each of us in our own lives should know what our greatest hits are, and we should try to find a way to recall them before we go out to perform again.
Absolutely. And then the science actually shows that thinking those of those positive and those memories actually boosts your confidence and allows you to perform better under those high stress situations.
Right. There is a priming effect here. You know, you mentioned power posing, which is one example of it. There's, you know, power posing is, you know, it's kind of awkward to sort of stand around like Superman, Superwoman. There's actually quieter ways you can do some of that. There's research that looks at, before you go into a job interview, if you were to spend just a couple of minutes writing about a time when you felt powerful, that can prime your mind to help you feel more powerful. So again, it is sort of trying to just quietly, it doesn't have to be anything super showy or super elaborate, just a way to sort of tweak your mind to put yourself at your most powerful, your most confident, your best self.
Absolutely, because when it comes to those first impressions, it's those first few moments, and you want to have that confidence to know that you're making an impactful and memorable impression.
I agree.
Perfect. So I'd like to jump to public speaking, because there's a whole chapter in your book that goes to public speaking, and this is a lot of our audience and a lot of our students have major fears when it comes to standing up and sharing an idea, and whether it's public speaking in front of a group or public speaking just in front of a couple of people in the boardroom. And can you break down some of the big picture from your book for that aspect?
Sure. So the best way to think about the book is essentially sort of hack techniques, you know, things you can do sort of in the last minute. Now, I can't emphasize enough, none of those techniques are more important than practicing. You know, obviously, the more you practice, the more you rehearse, the better you're going to be at it. So, you know, there's no substitute for having the substance and, you know, getting well-trained and getting prepared. But there are some things you can do in the last few minutes, and that's what I focus on in the book. So number one, there's a technique called reappraisal, which is a very subtle technique to try to reduce the nerves and anxiety that are a part of public speaking. One of the typical things people will say to somebody when they're nervous before a speech is, "Calm down," or "Don't be nervous." The problem is that we're biologically programmed to sense threats and to feel that fight or flight instinct kick in. When you tell somebody to calm down when they're nervous, you're kind of telling them to do something that physically they're really not going to be able to do. Reappraisal recognizes that. So instead of trying to go from nervous to calm, which is a big jump, it tries to shift you from nervous to excited. Now, excited is a highly aroused state, but it's a much more positive, more optimistic, it's more of a glass half full kind of state. And so there's been research of people in singing competitions, in math exams, that if you can just sort of stop telling yourself, "I'm nervous," stop telling yourself, "I need to be calm," and instead try to tell yourself, "Get excited. This is a great opportunity for me today." It's a subtle thing, but that can make a difference. The other thing, I met a guy while I was reporting the book, and I report on him a little bit. I call him the autopilot guy. He gives a lot of speeches in front of a lot of people, and he's busy. He doesn't have time to write a new speech every time, even though the topics are often different. So one of the things he does is the first 3 minutes of his speech, no matter what he's talking about, he's got sort of a standard opening that he does every time. He knows it cold. He knows all the inflections, all the pause points, and he can kind of do it without even thinking. And because of that, because he doesn't even need to think when he does it, he tends not to get very nervous. And as you know from your speaking, if you can get the first 3 minutes right, the audience is on your side, you're going to be okay. So he kind of goes into this autopilot mode for the first couple of minutes of his speech, and it's a very effective technique if you can find a way to adapt it to what you're doing.
Absolutely. It's almost priming during the actual speech itself because he's done it so often. That's awesome. And I think a big thing is just the fact, like you said, you hit on it when you said practice, because you can research all the performance routines, you can make the pre-performance everything, but if you haven't actually practiced your content, then whether it's a first impression or a public speaking appearance, you really need to know what's going to happen at that moment. I was reading an article of yours recently on Forbes where you were interviewed, and you said that's the fact that you have to be prepared for a salary negotiation and explaining your value proposition. So there, it's sort of two sides to the equation, where your book explains a lot of the first half, you know, the preparation and being ready, but you also you can't just rely on that to have all the experience that you want.
Right, yeah, the idea here is that there are sort of tips and techniques you can do to incrementally put yourself in the right mindset. But, you know, if you're entering a singing competition and you're a lousy singer, or if you're entering a spelling bee and you don't know how to spell, you know, these techniques are not going to make a difference. You know, there has to be some underlying substance to the kind of performance you're engaged in.
Absolutely. Now, question for you personally, do you have any pre-performance routines? I know you mentioned when it comes to writing, you'll look at some of your big articles and whatnot.
Yeah, so that's probably the biggest one for me in a writing context. The other thing I do, there's a chapter in the book that looks at rituals and superstitions, and there's actually been research around the idea of lucky objects. For instance, in colleges, lots and lots of college students have like a lucky pen they bring to exams, or they wear the same pair of sneakers, or they sit in the same seat every time. So there's a lot of kind of ritualistic, superstitious behavior around performance. And some of it does pertain to objects. There's been studies, for instance, that if you take a bunch of golfers who are about the same ability and you ask them to putt from the same distance, and you tell half of them, when you hand them the putter, this putter used to be owned by a PGA professional, those people will putt better because they think that somebody famous and a really good golfer used their club. So when I was writing this book, I got in touch with Malcolm Gladwell, the nonfiction writer, and I arranged to send him a computer keyboard, which he wrote on for 3 months, and then he shipped it back to me. So I know when I write a book like this, I'm writing it on Malcolm Gladwell's keyboard, and so it's my lucky keyboard. I don't use it every day. I say it's sort of like the family silver, you know. I only bring it out on special occasions. But when I do, you know I'm using his keyboard. It gives me a little bit of a burst of confidence. And, you know, so it's a little bit of a manipulation. You know, find those lucky objects, find those superstitions and rituals that work for you. If they make you feel more confident, confident people perform better. So it's sort of a virtuous circle.
Very nice. Now, you've talked quite a bit about the research that's gone into your book. How long was the book in a work in progress?
So I started the book about 3 years ago, and I had the manuscript complete about a year ago, so, you know, book production times are very long, so it was probably, you know, about 2 years start to finish. Finding the research was really the fun part of this. You know, there's so many people out there in academia who study something kind of obscure, they put a paper in a journal, and it doesn't get any attention. And the ability to kind of shine a light on it in a book like this was really a lot of fun. And it's surprising to me, even though I've been doing this for a while here at Harvard Business Review, that people in different disciplines don't really talk to each other. Here's a great example of that. So one of the chapters in the book is on pep talks, how to give a pep talk so that your team will get psyched up. So I found a few different researchers who'd looked at pregame locker room speeches in a sports setting. I found a guy who had looked at military pep talks before combat, and then I found a couple of researchers who looked at managerial and business settings. And the studies are really similar in terms of what they find, but the three researchers the other, or the fact that this research existed. So the ability to kind of cut across those silos and connect some trends, that's one of the fun things about doing a book like this.
Absolutely, and then you have a more well-rounded approach to how a layperson or someone who just picks the book up off the shelf can read it without being an expert and get all these different viewpoints.
Right, yeah. You know, a lot of this research is super helpful if people find it. And, you know, there's not enough mechanisms in the world because, you know, obviously you and I in our regular lives are not going around to libraries looking at academic journals very much.
Exactly. So that's part of our goal here is with Life Secret Sauce is, you know, it's an uphill battle to convince people to work on their soft skills every once in a while because they think, you know, I can have a conversation. I know how to talk to people. And they don't look into the next level, the next step up, which is what we're trying to bring people to. That's fascinating. Now, one last question on the book. What was your favorite part of the research, your favorite story that you were able to pull out of it?
So for the chapter on music, I spent a fair bit of time with a guy here in Boston where I'm based. He's the DJ for the Boston Red Sox and the New England Patriots. He chooses all the music that the players listen to before the games when they're warming up. He chooses all the in-game music. It's kind of a fascinating job if you've been to a big sports arena and, you know, a play happens and suddenly just the right song comes on that and it sort of energizes the crowd and really can kind of change the tone and tenor and the atmosphere in a way that might affect the play. He was a really interesting guy because there's a lot of research on what makes a particular song motivational to a person. So there's sort of, that chapter has the academic stuff in it, but I also spent time with, you know, this guy who makes his living helping choose the songs for a couple of very prominent sports teams.
That's incredible. That's awesome. So a couple questions just on for you personally. Something that I always like to ask, who is an inspiration to you and in your work?
Gosh, an inspiration to me in my work. When I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do professionally, I went to college as a finance major, and I thought I wanted to work on Wall Street. And I had a distant cousin who was a magazine editor, and I'd grown up looking at the magazine where he worked and seeing his name on the masthead, and he was one of the people that made me say, hey, you know, I have business skills as a finance major, but maybe I can go work for a business magazine. So that was sort of a remote personal connection that helped me get into the field where I am today. So he's probably somebody that I think about in terms of where my career ended up. I'm not sure I would be doing this otherwise.
Fantastic. Now, another fun one, because we are the conversation folks. So if you could have a conversation with anyone from past, present, or future, who would it be?
Past, present, or future? Gosh. I have three kids, and the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, I'd love to, distantly into the future, I'd love to see how their lives turn out. And, you know, and I hope they'd have a lot of happy stories to tell me. So, you know, I know you're asking the question in a professional context, but the first thought that comes to my mind when I hear that question is, you know, what the future will be like for my kids.
Absolutely. That's a perfect answer. So last question for you here. Is there anything that you wish that I had asked, maybe regarding pre-performance or the book itself?
That's a great question. The main takeaway here is that it's natural for people to feel nervous before they perform. You know, part of the reason we feel, you know, there's a lot of trepidation, a lot of anxiety around these things. There are things you can do. And if you watch the Olympics and you watch what Michael Phelps does before he swims, if you watch the Super Bowl and you watch the focus on Tom Brady's face when he walks in with his headphones on in before the game, those people are taught by psychologists a special routine of things to do because they're world-class performers. And all of us in our day jobs, we should come up with our own kind of routine and use some of the same techniques. And, again, it's no substitute for practice. You still need to know the underlying substance of what it is you're doing. But at the margin, it can help you perform better.
Fantastic. And so if someone wanted to grab a copy of your book or find out more about some of your writing, what's the easiest way for them to do so?
Sure. The book is called Psyched Up, and it's in bookstores everywhere. There's a website for the book. It's www.psychedupthebook.com. And my main work is at the website of Harvard Business Review, which is www.hbr.org.
Fantastic. So that's really the majority of what I have for you today. Short and sweet. I really appreciate the time that you've had for us and some of the advice and tips and tricks that we've used. I've learned quite a bit today, so I really appreciate you taking the time to be here with us.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. So thank you very much, everyone. That's Daniel McGinn, senior writer and editor at Harvard Business Review and author of Psyched Up, How the Science of Mental Preparation Can Help You to Succeed.
So, what did you think? Did you learn something cool about those pre-performance routines so that you know what to do in the moments that matter? I learned tons during this interview with Daniel. I am reading his book right now. I'm a little over halfway through. It's absolutely incredible. I highly recommend that you go pick it up. There's links for all that in the description below. But outside of that, I hope that you learned something new. Go check out Daniel's work. He's a writer at Harvard Business Review. He's got some incredible articles there. And if you are ready to unleash your inner awesome, learn how to talk to anyone, and grow an epic network, go ahead and click on those links in the below to find out more about us. Or you can always see us at www.lifessecretsauce.com. Until next time, ciao for now.